At FedEx, we're making lower emission vehicles our priority. Because Earth is our priority. Our goal is to be carbon neutral by 2040. We call it Priority Earth. FedEx, where now meets next.
The Oracle Network.
Due to the mature content of this program, listener discretion is advised.
Tuning back into The Depth of Darkness, the podcast that dives deep into all things dark and wrong in this world. We're your host, as always. I'm Mandy.
And I'm retired Major Hugh Jess. Coming at you. In your face.
As expected. Yes.
As always.
As always. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Depth of Darkness. Today we'll be discussing an oldie, but a goodie in the true crime world. And I'm sure most of you have heard the name at least once or twice, if you've been on this planet since the 90s or earlier. It's just a thought. But it's definitely an interesting case, for lack of better words. It's one filled with abuse, unfortunate subservience, and almost complete penile destruction. Annihilation.
Yeah.
And that's the notorious case of Lorena Bobbitt. Have you guys heard that name before? Because I was actually asking my brother-in-law the other day. I was like, have you heard of Lorena Bobbitt? And he's got like a solid 4 years on me. And he's like, no. I was like, are you sure you've never heard of Lorena Bobbitt?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, who is that? I'm like, okay, it's probably best you don't know.
Should I ask him if he knew who John Bobtail was?
Yeah.
Maybe he'd know then.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a little history lesson, folks, on who Lorena Bobbitt was. Then we'll slowly mosey on into the crime that took place and why it more than likely scars emotionally and one man physically. Every man known to Earth, if you know the story, it's going to scar you to some extent. So moving on over to biography.com. And this is an article dedicated to Lorena Bobbitt. So you're going to get an in-depth history lesson on who this woman was, kind of what led to the crime, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm going to be reading this verbatim. The link to this exact article will be down below. It doesn't really have an author on here, but it's from biography.com, and it's titled Lorena Bobbitt. So Lorena Bobbitt became a public figure after she sliced off her husband's penis in 1993, but since then she has evolved into an advocate for survivors of domestic violence.
Yeah, better sliced off than chewed off, I would imagine.
That
would
just...
Most guys' nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know. She didn't do that, no. So who is Lorena Bobbitt, you might ask? Well, in the early hours of June 23rd, 1993. So this is going to be a recap of the events that occurred, the actual crime, before going into the history itself, apparently. In the early hours of June 23rd, 1993, Lorena Bobbitt took an 8-inch knife from her apartment's kitchen and proceeded to cut off the penis of her husband, John Wayne Bobbitt. She then drove away from their apartment and threw the severed organ into a field in Manassas, Virginia. After her actions became public, the media swept in to cover everything from John's successful penis reattachment surgery to Lorena's trial in 1994.
Yeah. Lorena's trial and subsequent non-dating life.
We'll get to that. Lorena has stated that she was a victim of domestic violence throughout her marriage and that her husband had raped her shortly before she castrated him. Yeah. So you can kind of see what
it's
led
not,
to
yeah, it's
it.
Not like he didn't deserve it.
I'm sure he did. He's a prick, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
No pun intended, or
no,
is
he's
it?
A reattached prick.
We'll get to that too. Though John denied any abuse, Lorena was found not guilty of wounding her husband due to temporary insanity brought on by the trauma she'd endured. She has resumed the use of her maiden name of Lorena Gallo and became an advocate for victims of domestic violence. So now going to the early life of Lorena, you know, her childhood, her upbringing, so you can get kind of an idea of her morals, her mentality, and what why they ultimately deemed it as a bout of insanity versus, you know, she's psycho and that she chopped it off for no good reason, because that right. wasn't the case. So Lorena was born Lorena Lenore Gallo in Bouquet, I don't know if I pronounce this right, but Bouquet, Ecuador, in 1969. She grew up in Caracas, Venezuela, with two younger siblings. Her father worked as a dental technician, and the family led a middle-class lifestyle. So they lived comfortably and happily in their home in Venezuela. After a trip to the United States that was a gift for her quinceañera, Lorena wanted to live in the country. Though her family was unsuccessful in an attempt to emigrate, in 1987 she obtained a student visa. To earn money, she worked as a nanny and later took a position at a nail salon. And it was actually reported that it was actually the nanny who she began working for both jobs. So the nanny was actually a well-to-do businesswoman who owned a lot of nail salons, and she actually hired Lorena on, you know, she taught her and Lorena became a nail technician as well. So she wanted to make her way as an American citizen in the U.S. So now moving on to the relationship with John Bobbitt. So in 1988, Lorena ended up meeting John, and he was a U.S. Marine, and they met at a club for enlisted men, so men in the military, men in uniform. At the time, Lorena was a community college student in Virginia, and John became Lorena's first boyfriend when they subsequently began dating. So she was the first man he ever loved, or she... He was the first man she ever loved. What?
Yeah. Trying to turn this into some sort of a weird situation.
Some weird triangle of sorts. Yeah. But the pair were married on June 18th, 1989, when Lorena was 20 and John was 22. So they're pretty close in age, not too far off there. And they just seemed to mesh well at the time. Lorena has said that her husband became violent a few weeks after their wedding. So all the time while they were dating and leading up to their wedding, no domestic abuse. It happened after the wedding when he felt, you know, she's his wife. She has to do what he says. And John would hit her when she voiced disapproval of his dangerous driving, because he would oftentimes, you know, he liked going to the club or the bar and he liked getting drunk with his friends. You know, he was kind of that kind of personality. And she would tell him, you know, I don't want to be in the car with you. You drive dangerous. I don't want you driving drunk, like a sane person would say, you know, don't drive drunk. And he would get increasingly violent, and it's obvious that the alcohol brought out the violence in him. And according to Lorena, the violence in the relationship continued from that point. And he began to strike her continuously, and he would ultimately rape her numerous times throughout their marriage. And arguments often stemmed from her questioning his spending habits, or having people stay over at their apartment without letting her know ahead of time. So she had no knowledge of it until the people were literally already there in their living room. And you can imagine, you know, we wouldn't want our spouses to do that, right? Like, just have people come over without letting us know when it's our house, too. Like, that would piss me off. I would, you know, I'd be pissed off, too. But in her upbringing, she was very, I think they said she was very strict Catholic, you know, growing up. And basically the moral there was you have to be honoring and respectful to your husband, which you should be anyways. But in her upbringing, it was taught that what the man says goes. And so she would keep
quiet.
Well,
those were the days.
I know, right? No. But hey. But the issue here was it bothered her, but anytime she would try and suggest it even lightly, he would just go off the handle and start hitting her and get aggressive with her, and it would escalate ultimately to him forcing himself on her. So you can see how all this abuse really had a traumatic impact on her. And you have to feel for her. I mean, going through this and him being the first man she was ever with, you gotta, in that mentality, she's probably like, you know, what am I doing wrong? Why is he doing this to me? What did I do? She doesn't know. You know, it was all new to her. She'd never been in a relationship before. And basically, at one point, according to this article on the biography site, Lorena ended up getting pregnant, and she was really happy about it. But John, he did not want anything to do with the baby. He didn't want a baby, period, at that time. And he basically forced her to get an abortion. And she said that at the clinic, he would taunt her and kind of poke fun at her about how the procedure it could kill her, you know, it's so dangerous, yet he was the one basically forcing her to get it. So to him, it meant nothing. She's sitting there traumatized. Like, that's awful. Like, what kind of guy does that? Like, you can see what a douchebag he was. And he was. He was a douche to the extreme. So going back, John had worked as a Marine, but he ultimately stopped being a Marine in 1991. It doesn't elaborate as to why, whether he was discharged honorably or dishonorably, I don't know. But at that point, Lorena was the only one working. She was working at that nail salon, and you can only imagine that was very little income. I mean, it can't be a lot being a nail technician. And so her money, everything she got, was their main source of income. And he was basically just sitting at home, you know, dicking around, no pun intended again. And you can see that also put a lot of stress on her financially. So she ultimately ended up stealing from her employer. So the woman that she nannied with and then who became her boss as the nail technician. And she said that this was due to the financial pressure, that she needed more money and she felt like that was the only way she could get it. And her and John were not able to keep up with their mortgage payments on the home that they had just purchased in 1990. They were quickly falling into mass amounts of debt. And she ended up shoplifting. She shoplifted other places as well. She ended up getting clothes. Yeah, I don't know why you need dresses or clothes when you're financially struggling.
She's kind of a pain in the ass, too, because, you know, she can't blame him for that.
Well, what she said for that, what it says here is that she wanted to improve her appearance to keep her husband from looking at other women.
Yeah, it's that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right. I don't know. But leading up to an eventual bloody mess in John's pants, the police were called to the Bobbitts' home on multiple occasions, and in February 1991, John pleaded guilty to assault and battery, though the charges against him were dismissed after he went through counseling. So at least he took the measure of, okay, maybe I need to change myself, I'll go to counseling. Did it really work? Let's find out. Let's keep moving on. So Lorena and John separated in October 1991, but then they quickly reunited a year later, so in 1992. And then in April of 93, they moved back in together into a new apartment in Manassas. And on June 21st, 1993, Lorena began to process the filing for a protective order. So obviously things weren't still going well. if she's trying to...
It's about that time she bought a new knife sharpener too, wasn't it?
I don't know. Probably.
How'd you say it?
Yeah. Just get one of those pencil sharpeners, but get it a little larger. Oh, that's awful. That's a disturbing thought that I just put in my own head.
The grinder.
But John had denied that he was abusive during their marriage. So even to this day, he's like, no, I never hit her. You know, I was not a bad husband. It's all in her head. You know, he really put off the persona that he was not the bad guy. Even though there's many people who've come forward and said, yes, he, you know, when he would drink, he was very violent or verbal, whether it was verbally or physical, he was aggressive with her. And so, you know, what happened behind closed doors, we can only imagine. But in his version of the events that unfolded between their marriage, Lorena was an extremely jealous woman and that she would often hit him. And if he struck her back, it was to protect himself. So that was his side of the story. He was only protecting himself, right? And his attorney had apparently stated that terminating Lorena's pregnancy was a mutual decision. So that they agreed on it, which in a way they did because she ultimately was the one who went in and got it done.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the sticky situation, and I don't want to get into that, but I mean, she could have just up and left him and kept the baby. I mean, that's if she really ultimately wanted it. But then again, that mental torment, being with him, he was her first husband, you know, first lover, whatever. She probably felt like she would lose him. You know, she didn't want to leave him. So she ultimately made the decision to go forward with the abortion. But that's such a sad situation. And I don't think that was a mutual decision. I think she wanted it, but he basically made her feel like he would leave her in an instant if she didn't do it. So that's so sad. I don't know. I can't imagine that situation for myself. I just can't.
We're just taking what they're saying at face value. We really don't know.
We don't know what actually happened, because the only two that know the actual situation is the two of them, you know, or anybody who was actually there and involved. But John Bobbitt, so again, Lorena's ex-husband.
Or John Bobtail, as I like to call
him. Yeah. He's offered the explanation that Lorena was upset that he planned to divorce her, putting her green card and ability to become a U.S. citizen at risk. Okay. In 1993, Lorena denied that her marriage took place because she wanted to stay in the country. What does that mean? Were they married or were they not? Yeah. I don't... She denied that her marriage took place? Oh, okay. Now I get what they're saying. She basically said that, no, that she didn't just get married to stay in the country. She married him because she loved him. That's... Okay. I read it weird.
Yeah.
That confused myself as I read it. And she's reported to have told Vanity Fair that, I thought John was very handsome, blue eyes, a man in a uniform. You know, he was almost like a symbol, a Marine, fighting for the country. I believed in this beautiful country. I was swept off my feet. I wanted my American dream. Ah, beautiful. Yeah. And then when you get here, you're like, it's not what I was expecting.
The hell's going on?
The man and everything else that comes with it. Now, going up to the actual good stuff, that the juicy, meaty stuff, giggity, that you guys are here for. So on June 23rd, 1993, the castration of John Bobbitt. Dun, dun, dun. According to Lorena, in the early hours of June 23rd, 1993, her husband came home drunk. After the attack, she spotted a knife when she went into the kitchen. She
spotted it.
She spotted it in the corner of her eye, and it gave her an idea.
Yeah. She returned right where I left it, by the sharpener.
That's a nice, sleek blade I got there. Might want to use it on something. She returned to the bedroom. Anytime you do that sling blade, I just can't. potted meat.
Don't got any potted meat.
French fried potatoes. Yeah. If you guys have not seen Sling Blade, it has no relation to the story. Please go watch it. You'll be doing yourself a favor.
Yeah.
Jimmy Bob Thornton is amazing in that movie. He's got his pants all the way up to his chest. He's like slouched over with his jaw stuck out, and he's always like, It's not supposed
strange.
To be funny. It's not supposed to be funny. But
that scene, you know, just not to get too far off the beaten path here, but the scene with him and John Ritter is.
What
maybe one of the
right
funniest
now?
Scenes of all time.
Yeah.
Where John Ritter's trying to figure him out and they're having lunch together. It's just so funny.
Yeah. Don't give it away. Let them go watch it and feel it for themselves.
The look on Ritter's face.
If you guys know Jimmy Bob Thornton, right? Is that his name?
Billy
Bob Thornton.
You're
okay.
Thinking of John Bobbitt or Jim Bobbitt or something. I don't
Jimmy Bob, Billy Bob Thornton.
Jimmy Bobbitt.
Jimmy Bobbitt.
Jimmy Bobbitt off. That's the Russian counterpart.
Yeah, if you guys know Billy Bob Thornton, you know, Bad Santa, you know his demented dark humor. Like, he doesn't care. He'll offend anybody and everybody. And you'll get a taste of that in Sling Blade. It's definitely serious at times, obviously, and parts of it that take place are very serious, but just his character. You love his character, but you hate him at the same time. So definitely, again, go watch Sling Blade. Let us know how you liked it.
That's I like the way you talk.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, but going back to Lorena Bobbitt, she spotted that knife gleaming in the kitchen, and she had an idea. She returned to the bedroom and cut off her sleeping husband's penis. Why? I do know, but...
Yeah.
What was she thinking when she did that, though? Like,
and once again, she used a knife. She didn't chew it off. For
at
all
least
you
she
guys
didn't
out
use
there
scissors.
Holding yourself.
Can you imagine just snipping it off with a pair of, like... Or gardening shears?
Yeah. Well,
I always think of like the barbecue scissors that you cut
Just take one of those little pitchfork thingies that you use when you're grilling weenies on the grill. Yeah. Stab it with that and then just saw it off.
Stab it with the little fork and then...
Yeah, the little fork.
Grab the little serrated knife and slowly saw it off. I don't know.
With surgical precision.
Honey, Lorena. Stop, that tickles.
God. I mean, he was shit-faced drunk, so it might have tickled. Oh, God. Lorena, still holding the knife and the severed penis, then drove away from their apartment building. She tossed the penis out into a field while she was driving and then ended up going to a friend's house. At her friend's urging, Lorena then called the police and told them where she had thrown the penis. So she was actually not really wanting to at first. She's like, you know what? Screw him. He can't screw anything else now, the dick. There's so many puns in that. I'm loving it.
So to speak.
Yeah. Police located the penis after a while of searching, and they ultimately took him in for reattachment surgery.
Found it in a coyote's mouth.
No, there's so many rumors around it that a dog chewed it. Some guy put it in a hot dog container and almost ate it. Like, so many rumors surrounding this tale.
Wasn't it true that she ended up throwing it in a field, but her first choice was to thumbtack it to his forehead? But
I mean,
she couldn't find a tack?
Pin the dick on the dickhead?
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
Pin the dick on the jackass.
Yeah, but at the same time, while he was undergoing reattachment surgery, she was actually in the hospital as well, getting a examination done for a rape at the same exact time. So, obviously, to prove that she was being abused by her husband. And the news surrounding this whole case, her chopping off his penis and everything leading up to it, it was just a whirlwind of media attention, as you can imagine. Nothing like this, I think, has ever happened before, and nothing like it has happened since. Not like this. Like, it's very
maybe
unique.
Back in medieval times or something.
Maybe, where people obviously didn't have the media outlets. But some women's rights activists thought that the incident could lead to more awareness of domestic violence. But instead, the case became a tabloid sensation and fodder for comedians. That was verbatim from the article.
Off with his penis!
Yeah, off with his penis. So people just poked fun at it and didn't take the... It is kind of humorous. I know that sounds evil, but I mean...
It's more than kind of.
It's a little evil. But
the
fact was that they were basically undermining her abuse and saying that, like, oh, you know, she just chopped it off because she was jealous. You know, everybody had their own opinion on it, and they weren't looking at the whole story and what led to her doing that. Because everybody has their breaking point, right? So everybody, if you push and push and push somebody, they're going to snap eventually. It might take forever. It might take a few minutes. You know, everybody's different. But with her...
I think most guys would have been more comfortable if she'd have just shot him.
Right. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
She should have, I'm not going to go there with my own opinion, but he was a bad person. You know, do I think what she did was wrong? Yes. Could she have done things differently? Yes. But, you know, it already happened. You can't really change it. But that could be another story for another day, just me going off on a tangent on my own opinions. So now we're going to move on over to the trials. So the ultimate decision on the crimes that just occurred. And Hugh, take it away on the trials.
Thanks, Mandy. November 1993, John went on trial for marital sexual assault. Parentheses, though Lorena had accused him of rape, at the time Virginia law required couples to be living separately or for serious physical injuries to occur for a charge of marital rape. He was found not guilty.
Dick.
In January 1994, Lorena's trial began. She had been charged with malicious wounding, which put her at risk for up to 20 years behind bars and possible deportation from the United States. During the televised proceedings, Lorena testified that her husband had raped and hit her throughout their marriage. Her defense team argued that she had been tormented by years of abuse and driven temporarily insane by the sight of his penis. And that slicing off her husband's penis, she had been subject to an irresistible impulse.
That's a good term, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's him coughing, trying to catch his breath afterwards, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, God. At least he was drunk, you know,
yeah,
when it happened.
The prosecution's case included a statement Lorena had given to police in which she said, "He always have orgasm and he doesn't wait for me to have orgasm." She later stated in the interview,
what?
Was inaccurate because she didn't have access to a translator. During Lorena's trial, John testified that he had never committed any such acts of violence. Okay. Against his wife. However, other witnesses corroborated that Lorena had appeared with bruises and stated that John had been seen hitting and shoving his wife. Friends of John said under oath that they had heard him express a liking for forced sex.
What a guy.
Yeah. Outside the courtroom, there was an almost circus-like atmosphere. One radio station served up hot dogs and sliced soda.
I wonder which radio station that was.
Chocolate penises and t-shirts with the slogan, "Manassas, a cut above the rest," were available for purchase. But not everyone considered the case a joking matter. There was three or four people that didn't. Though they weren't the focus of much media coverage, members of the Hispanic community regularly came to the courthouse to show their support for Lorena.
Aww, even if they didn't know her, they supported her.
Yeah.
Aww.
On January 21, 1994, Lorena was found not guilty due to temporary insanity, meaning she did not have to spend time in prison for wounding John. Following the acquittal, she was sent to a hospital for a 45-day psychiatric evaluation as required by Virginia state law, after which she was released. And they show a picture of her sitting there smiling.
I mean, she's a pretty lady.
Yeah.
She's pretty.
She had some
I think she was
for.
Way better than him. Like, what was his problem? Like, he should have treated her better, honestly.
No.
That's just my opinion.
He's like a controlling SOB, you know. That's what it seems like. That's my own personal opinion, by the way.
Like, if we wanted to get real deep on why, I mean, yes, I do think she got pushed over the edge and just snapped. And I think she probably blacked out for a bit when she did that. She was just filled with rage and just wanted to, you know, take away the thing that was harming her. I think that's what happened. I think she wanted to take away his manhood, because that's what he was using to abuse her with. I think that's why she did it.
Yeah. Once again, I think most guys would have favored her shooting him instead. But, you know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Life after acquittal. Despite her notoriety following the attack and trial, Lorena chose to remain in the Manassas area. When asked why by the New York Times in 2019, she responded, "I live here. This is my home. Why should he have the last laugh?" I don't know if he was laughing
yeah.
about it.
Everybody laughed at him.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he's John Bobtail. Come on. Lorena became a U.S. citizen in the summer of 1994. Her divorce from John was finalized in 1995. She accepted money for some appearances in South America, but I said she rejected the $1 million offered if she would pose for Playboy. With a pair of scissors, no doubt, or a sharp knife.
Yeah.
To earn a living, she worked as a cosmetologist, an administrative assistant, and a real estate agent.
Well, good for her. I mean, she's working it.
Domestic violence advocate. With the Lorena Gallo Foundation, founded in 2007, Lorena created an organization to help victims of domestic violence and their children and to raise awareness of the issue. She has explained she didn't know of the option to seek refuge in a shelter during her marriage. She has also revealed, "As an immigrant woman, I was often too scared to call the police for help. My abusive husband always threatened that he could have the police detain me and have me deported back to my country." It's not all that easy to do, by the way.
There
are rights. People have rights, you know.
Right, but the national-born American citizen, I guess they would take his side over hers. So
yeah,
I think that's what he held over.
She wouldn't immediately get deported unless she was proven to be a menace.
Right.
Later, relationship with and daughter. While attending Northern Virginia Community College after her trial, Lorena met David Bellinger. The two were close friends before a romantic relationship developed. Their daughter, Olivia, was born in 2005, though Lorena has sometimes referred to Bellinger as her husband. She opted not to marry him. Probably, you know, I'm just saying, as a guy, maybe he dodged a bullet or something worse.
a knife, perhaps.
Documentary and Lifetime movie. Lorena took part in Lorena, a 2019 documentary that was produced by Jordan Peele. The program revisited how her claims of domestic violence had been swept aside in 1993 as the media focused on John's severed penis.
Lorena
also served as an executive producer and narrator for the 2020 Lifetime biopic, I Was Lorena Bobbitt.
And then it has a link down here. You can watch
yeah, it has a
I
link.
Was Lorena
watch.
Bobbitt.
I Was Lorena Bobbitt on Lifetime Movie Club. Fact
yeah.
check. We strive for accuracy and fairness. If you see something that doesn't look right, contact us. The
yeah.
whole thing doesn't look right. But, you know, what's funny about it is it doesn't really go into John Bobbitt that much. Not that much.
No, not
There was
much.
Another article that did, and for those that want to read that, you could go to abc.go.com/US/moment. John Bobbitt
we'll
realized his
below.
Wife cut off his
we'll
penis.
Leave it down below, folks.
Yeah, we'll leave a link for you.
But on top of that, I mean, there's tons of articles that I looked at. There's another one from TMZ that I'll also include down below. That before we cut, no pun intended, to our closing statements, the article from TMZ, it was from 2019, and it actually said that John. Now this will make you happy, folks. That he may need to have his foot amputated due to an infection related to that penis reattachment. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
According to the TMZ article, apparently Bobbitt says that he got treatment at two different hospitals, obviously because it was a process. They reattached it, but obviously it had to heal properly, you know, all that good stuff after a surgery. But a doctor, after the fact, had later diagnosed him with osteomyelitis. I don't know if I pronounced that right.
Myelitis.
Yeah, and it's an infection of the bone, and it was in his left foot. So now they're thinking they might actually have to amputate it from the internal infection. So he has an ongoing issue with that penis.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he had gone on many radio shows, you know, famous ones like Howard Stern and... Howard Stern, I think, was the one who actually raised money to try and make his penis even bigger, because apparently John had done some adult film activity after getting it reattached, because, I mean, that shows what an A-class winner he was. And so Howard Stern took that, and he's like, oh, you know, that's hilarious. Let's make it even bigger. And then he became what's known as, come on, Hugh, tell him, what was his name? What was his famous name that we love?
Franken-penis.
Franken-penis. Yeah, I have no desire in looking that movie up.
Yeah, from what I understand, didn't they reattach his penis at a 90-degree angle?
Oh, ick. Ugh. Just a bunch of, like, stitch marks on it and different shades of skin. So gross. I don't want to ever watch that. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah. John Bobbitt-tale.
Yeah. But anyways, on that note, everybody, now that we've dived kind of deep...
Now that John Bobbitt has dived deep.
Yeah.
With his Franken-penis.
into
the unknown.
Porn stars.
We don't know where he dived with it, by the way.
It's such a disturbing case.
Yeah.
But into the case of John and Lorena Bobbitt, let's dive even deeper into our closing statements. Whee!
Ah!
Love our show and want to help support the Dark Cause, then please consider leaving us a rating and review on Apple iTunes or wherever else you can leave reviews. There are other sites you can do so, and your reviews are actually what helps our show get noticed a bit more and easier, and it helps other listeners find our show quicker. So it's a win-win. And we're still doing that awesome sticker giveaway. So if you guys leave us a 5-star review, you know, actually leave a little note, a review, not just the rating, you'll get one of our awesome Depth of Darkness stickers when you send us a screenshot of your review. So then because it takes Apple forever to show those reviews. I know the other platforms that accept reviews, it'll show up almost instantly, but Apple takes like a day, sometimes a week to show reviews. So if you guys do want a sticker, we have that going on, you know, for quite a while now. Just let us know. You know, send us
a
screenshot.
I've got a great idea for another sticker, by the way.
Franken-penis?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. All right, folks, send us your thoughts. Should we do specialty stickers for each of the Demented True Crime episodes? We can have the stiletto going up that shoe fetish slayer's face or his butt, whatever you want. We can have a Franken penis. We can have all sorts of weird, you know, maybe a skin-covered lampshade for...
I think for the shoe slayer guy, you got to have like an engine tied to a body splashing into the river. Isn't that what he was known for doing?
Yeah, he rigged
stuff
him up
like
in
that.
His garage. That was so gross.
Oh, no, I don't want that.
Mm-mm. The stiletto's funnier, though, because, you know, shoes. He was a fetish. He had fetishes for shoes. But let us know, guys. And then we'll have some sort of giveaway where you guys can win the whole set of those stickers. You got to let us know if you want that, though, because we will deliver. Don't ask us for it if you don't want it, because it's coming in your face hard.
Chances are it's coming in your face.
nice and gooey.
Yeah. Nice and gooey and all of a sudden like.
But yeah, just send us a screenshot of your review on whichever platform you're able to do so, and then we'll send you a sticker. And if you do want those specialty stickers, let us know. We'll have them made up for you. So with that said, that's all for this week's episode, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in to The Depth of Darkness. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
I'm Poltergeist, and I make inappropriate songs about horror movies.
So basically, I just came to see some naked D's and A's for free. Take a peek, take a key. 12 cabins, 12 vacancies, 12 bodies, mother pray for me. I might go psycho occasionally. One body, too many, pray for me, cause we all go a little mad sometimes.
No happy ever after, just chapter after chapter after chapter. Massacre, make the Ripper look like an amateur ambassador of the slashers. Michael!
Lord of the dead, Lord of the dead. You could wake up in the coroner's bed. This is the hour for mourning and dread. Drain all the blood that was stored in his head.
All of the apologies that you can muster from your dread won't protect you on your bed. Nothing will from Pumpkinhead.
This is not a dream, baby. This ain't Halloween, baby. When I'm on the scene, this is what we call a scream, baby.
Subscribe on YouTube at PoltergeistOD. Follow me on Instagram and the Slasher app at Poltergeist_OD.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated, and right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
Been thinking about McDonald's all day. Can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.